welcome the presentation entitled Improving Health and Mental Health Outcomes Through Peer-Led Services Using the Facing Up to Us Health Model. It's my pleasure to introduce our presenter, Lisa St. George. Ms. St. George is the Director of Recovery Practices at Recovery Innovations, a large mental health program in Phoenix, Arizona, and the Director of the Recovery Opportunity Center, which conducts training and education regarding recovery. Ms. St. George is an expert in developing recovery-focused systems and has successfully supervised peer workforces in more than 20 programs, providing leadership and professional development to more than 600 peer support workers. Please welcome Lisa St. George.
Well, first of all, I just want to honor all of you for hanging in there at the end of the day and coming here. I really appreciate it, and I'm happy to be able to present to you today about facing up. And it's great that it comes at the end of this day because it kind of ties together a lot of things that we've talked about today. And in fact, it uses some of the tools that were presented by Peggy and Lisa this afternoon. It's one of the tools that we put in the book and that we use to help people begin to understand where they stand health-wise. But it's a lot more than that tool. And in fact, it's a wonderful class that we've had great experiences with. I want to just tell you a little bit about our organization so that you can see the kind of breadth and depth that I'm talking about. Because this is a peer service. It's taught by peer support specialists. It's very mutual. And one of the reasons for that is that our organization has a huge peer workforce. We used to be the largest peer workforce in the world. We're at probably 600, and we're growing quite quickly, so it's really hard to keep up with how many peer workers we have, but just surpassed by the VA. So what a great thing. What a great thing. And we provide services in Delaware, in North Carolina, in Texas, in Arizona, in California, in Washington State, and in New Zealand. And I have had the honor of starting all of the peer services in Phoenix and our peer services in California, in San Diego, and in Ventura, and our peer services in New Zealand. And when I say starting, I mean from ground up. So I have a strong affection and value for peer support services. I know that as a person with lived experience of recovery myself, before the days of peer support, the people who helped me the most were the people who were trapped in the hospital with me, just being honest, and really helped me to laugh about my desperate situation in that moment, right? And so we've seen amazing things happen with our workforce. We have them in every program that we run. They serve people side by side with all of our professionals. We value their opinion and their input. They sit at the table. They make decisions with us. And I'm part of the decision-making process. We have a career ladder in our organization, so we're at all levels. And it's extremely effective. And it's a wonderful way to do this kind of business side by side with people who have lived experience of recovery that are offering their assistance to everybody, not just the people they serve, but the system as a whole to help the systems recover. In addition to that, our peer support training, peer employment training, certified peers training, has been being used since the year 2000. I co-wrote that and trained it for about the first 3 years till I started getting heavily involved with other things. And to this date, and we're working hard to find out exactly how many people we've trained, but we feel that it's about 6,000 people around the world that we have trained. And I don't say that to say, like, wait, you know. I say that to impart the information about how systems around the world are understanding the value of peers. And when we go out and do this training outside Arizona where we don't bill for it, it means that entities, companies, and systems are making a commitment to peer support because they buy that training. We go there and provide it. That says something about the value of peer support. So what I'm going to talk about today is Facing Up. It's one of our courses. We like to provide courses rather than groups because it gives people a valued social role. And this training is particularly unique because as we provide it to people, they become the next facilitators right alongside us. So it's sort of a way, I'm really have a difficult time behind a microphone. I'm used to kind of wandering around. I don't want to disrupt their, I'm worried to disrupt their recording. I don't want to disrupt the recording. Anyway, so, you know, what's so wonderful is that as people participate in the course, then they can go ahead and facilitate the next course, and we sort of hand off to each other what we've learned. And it also gives people an opportunity to step up in a different way in their wellness and to be leading and to be someone who is facilitating the wellness of other people. However, the class being conducted by peers gives it a very mutual kind of level. It's no expert saying this is what you need to do or you should do. It's people creating ideas from what they know, from their own lived experience, what's helped them, what they understand, what they think about, and sharing every day. And so the third bullet point, we really think that having classes is important, and we got this from Boston University, actually. The Recovery Education Center at Boston University was a big aha moment for us. And we understood that at people coming to classes can say, I'm going to my class. They don't have to say, I'm going to my mental health group. And it takes on a different role. It gives people a purpose for going to something that's important to them educationally. And we found it so important that we have a private post-secondary school at our services in Phoenix so that people can get a certificate from a private post-secondary school. So they're not just coming to classes on recovery, classes on facilitating recovery classes, or a certificate in recovery can be had there. They're going for their own wellness at the same time that they're learning things. So it's a wonderful opportunity for people. And so some of the things that are in the course, we'll just kind of quickly go through these, is creating a vision statement. So creating what your objective is as a person and knowing what you need in your life, what's important to you, is one of the places that we start off. We also look at stress. We talk about negative self-talk. Does anybody ever have that little voice that's saying to them, you can't really do this? Which mine is talking really loudly right now. Be quiet. And we, you know, we have those kinds of things that can create barriers for us. And we talk about these things so that we learn that we're not the only one that has that, and what can we do about it to move ahead. We talk about how to be in a relationship with our primary care physician, and to take the driver's seat in that relationship in some way so that we're not going there passively, but we're going there with a plan to meet with a person expert to expert. I'm the expert on me. You're the expert on the medical care. And we both have a part to play in that. And we talk about products and understanding the labeling. My husband bought something from the store the other day, and he said, you know, it said it was a healthy thing, but when I got it home, I didn't understand anything on the label, so I'm concerned for us to eat that, you know. And I think that understanding labels is an important part of wellness. And for lots of our folks, you know, we can talk about eat healthy food, but I don't know about what it's like in your city, but lots of our folks have a hard time affording the really healthy food. And we need to talk about these things and find ways to help people eat healthy on a budget that is really, I mean, I was on that budget for a long time, and it's really hard to live on. So helping people understand how to eat well on what they can afford. We talk about relationships. And we talk about spirituality, which was touched on this morning, which is just a really unique, wonderful thing that we're realizing about people, that they have lots of components, and one of them is spirituality, whatever that means to them. And then we talk about how to go forward with a healthy lifestyle, and then we prepare to facilitate the next class. I'm going to pass around the book so you can see it. So some of the things that we do in the class are try to create a learning community so that people are not just coming to the class, which is great, but they're coming there and they're developing friendships and they're collaborating with people that they might go out in the community and do things with. In the class, we don't just come to the class and do what's in the book, but we do a lot of expansive things. So if we're talking about fitness centers, the class would go and investigate different fitness centers and find out where they feel comfortable. Because for lots of our folks, we don't feel comfortable going places for the first time maybe by ourselves. So we'd go with a class. We'd call them ahead, say we're coming to check you out. We'd get a tour. We'd understand the machines there or whatever's there. We'd talk to the people there and see if we fit and we feel comfortable there and if we feel welcome. And we might go to several different places. Sometimes we go to dance classes or community centers where they have yoga. So it can be a whole array of things that we go and look at, take trips to the grocery store and really look at what kinds of products work or how to work a grocery store, because there's a certain way to shop in a grocery store that's going to be more healthy. And going as a group is fun and effective. And some of the other things that the folks have done are take the public transportation, which is a new and unique thing in Phoenix. It's not here, but it's a new and unique thing in Phoenix that we have a light rail and ride on that light rail and see what parks they can get to on that light rail, take a healthy picnic lunch, might make healthy lunches every day that the class is occurring, all kinds of things. And other kinds of classes that people think of that they're interested in but they haven't ever gone to and they could use some support to go and check it out, we will do that with them. And then basically, as in everything that we do at Recovery Innovations, the people that are participating are the ones that are in charge. So they're, as the class is proceeding, they're telling us what else they would like to do, what else. And then we find ways to make that happen. So the class is facilitated in a way that upholds our vision and our mission. And our mission statement is to create opportunities and environments that empower people to recover, to succeed in accomplishing their goals, and to reconnect with themselves, others, and meaning and purpose in life. And so all the things that we do connect back to that vision, and this class then would adhere to those kinds of goals and putting the person in charge. So this is a little cartoon kind of depiction of the way that we view what happens to people in the mental health system, and it goes like this. So someone comes in with difficulties, maybe some disappointments, and they get a diagnosis. And then they're told they have a disease. And then they're told they're disabled. And then they're disempowered, because people start doing for them what they actually could do themselves, but nobody wants to risk it, okay? Which causes them to feel disenfranchised and disconnected from their community, which can be really demoralizing. And then we say they're dysfunctional. And we call this the D-list, okay? And it buries people. And we want to help people emerge from that. And it's not something that our systems do on purpose. It's the way that things have worked for a long time for people. So we want to work from this kind of a perspective that we call the A-list, with a person who we see as having assets and abilities, who's had achievements in life, that we are authentic with, that we are working with them as the authority, who and a person who is autonomous in their decision making. And so the person will be visible and fully present and able to exercise all of their opinions and decision making power with us. So if we go through and look at what's contained in the book, it's in modules 1 and 2, we talk about wellness, and we begin to look at our self-talk and how to keep a positive focus in life. And there's a lot of questions in the modules that create rich discussion. There's a story in there that really talks about a person that we know very well who worked with us, who died from kidney failure in one night in a psychiatric hospital. So the team saw her the day before. She said she wasn't feeling well. She was picking up her psych records because she was going into the hospital because everything that she was describing was being put in the psychiatric box. Anybody familiar with that? The next day we called to see how she was doing, and they told us she had died from kidney failure in a night, in 24 hours. And it's very painful because we loved her, we cared about her. She was valuable to us in so many ways. We were learning from her, and it's just a huge loss in the world when one of us dies. And so it's prompted a lot of things that we've done, because we've had, unfortunately, lots of team members die from those same kinds of issues. And in fact, I've had those same kinds of events in my life where everything I was describing was put in the psychiatric box until I ended up on the heart surgery table, right? Like, go home and did you take your meds today? Well, no, I didn't, because it was morning. I take them at night. I didn't think to say, oh, emergency room doctor, I'm sorry, I take that med at night. So he said, go home. Well, I ended up in heart surgery the next day. Because when you have a list that contains certain medications, you know, and we want people to be able to advocate in a much better way than I did and say, emergency room doctor, what I'm describing to you is real, so you need to listen to me. So because we can, you know, not be such good self-advocates sometimes. So one of the ways that we help people understand how to be good self-advocates is understanding this map of consciousness. So the first time I ever saw this, I thought, really? okay. I didn't really understand it. But I'm going to explain it to you in this way. Have you ever gone to work, having a great day, there was no traffic, there wasn't any ice and snow on the road, you got dressed, you had time to eat breakfast, and you're feeling really great, and you're not full of stress yet or anything. And you're going to go into work, and it's just feeling great. You go to get your coffee, and negative Nate is at the coffee pot. And he starts talking about how he had traffic. And, oh, he has this to do and that to do. And, oh, can't believe this person's coming in today. And da-da-da-da-da, right? And pretty soon you're feeling yourself just get the life sucked right out of you because someone who's so negative is pulling your hopes away for that day. So where we work, and I have to step away and show you. One thing I can say for sure at our organization, we work here, right? So if you've got everybody working from this level of love, you're going to overcome all of this stuff, right? But if you've got people who are just barely here being courageous coming to work, it's going to be easy to fall below that line. So we want to work in these high levels of acceptance and reason and willingness and love. And we want to help people to see themselves in those high levels of consciousness and to be, you know, imagine if someone was in the realm of acceptance, just accepting that they're working on their health, accepting that they're working on their mental health care, accepting that they're doing the things that they want to do about them, their health care, and moving forward in that kind of a direction. If they go into an ER and there's an angry doctor in there who's frustrated that he's been on 14 hours, they're going to overcome that with their ability to be in that accepting frame of mind. Make sense?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
It says log, and it says 700 plus and mm-hmm. down to zero.
Yeah.
Is that a rating system that... utilize, or is that just arbitrary?
It's actually, Dr. Hawkins actually measured his level of strength electronically with electrodes, okay? And when the lower levels of thought processes were going on, he couldn't lift as much, right? So the 700 is like you have much more physical strength actually when you're in a positive frame of mind than when you're in a negative frame of mind, right? So that's what those measurements are.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next part of the training goes about determining who you're going to have for a primary care physician. I happen to be actually in this process right now. And I'm going from doctor to doctor until I find a doctor that I feel comfortable with. Not to waste money. I mean, I'm not going every week, but I'm really trying to find, and I'm telling them up front, I'm trying to find a doctor when I go in, and here's what I'm looking for. And because we talk about sort of interviewing the doctor and not being a passive recipient of services when you go to see them, and to then do some work on your side before you go so that you're engaging in a more equal relationship with them. You have things prepared, you have your questions prepared, and you're in this business kind of relationship with them, and you're purchasing their services. And then we go through the physical health screening, which is exactly what Peggy and Lisa were talking about. And the work is down on the bottom there with Judith Cook and all those folks that conducted that. And we took those ideas, those measurements that they were getting at that time, and we created a way for people to track that's identified in the book, and they can write down all the measurements for their outcomes with those processes and then take those to their doctor and have a good understanding of where they stand in that moment. And so each one of those, so we measure their BMI, their blood pressure, those things that were talked about this morning. Then we get into stress management. And the cool part about this is that we work from a perspective of what have you done to measure your stress. Here's what I've done. How has that worked? Do you know something else? Could you combine two things? And the participants share their wisdom. And believe me, lots of wisdom is in the room. People know how to do stuff to help themselves. They've helped themselves many, many times before. Do you guys have any expert stress management tools that you use? What might some of those be?
Take a hot bath.
Yep. Yep. People love that.
Take a good
yep.
walk.
Yep.
Cats.
Yep. Oh, that's my fave. Cats. What else?
Music, shower, biking, walking.
Yep.
Breathing.
So, yep.
Deep breathing.
Yep. Yep. And the list gets really long. And that's something that we want, because we want people to have more than one thing to choose from. And we've learned over the years, and you know, I think you know one of the first ways that we started understanding this was when we started working with RAP, right? When people would create their wellness toolbox, they would contribute all kinds of tools to it, and everybody would learn from that. So this is the same kind of a thing when we're talking about how to manage stress. We also talk about something that is called meta-mood, and how you can really decide which direction you're going to let your mood go. Are you going to go with those big angry feelings, or are you going to step back and decide how you're going to put that forward and take a different direction? If you step back and take some deep breaths and walk around the block or something, can you have that, you know, big feeling take a different direction? So we want to help people to have many ways of doing different kinds of things that can help them to manage stress and reduce anxiety besides just medication, right? Because there's lots of internal tools that we all have. Then we talk about some of the secrets to good health, and the basic one being eating well, the basic two being physical exercise, And the basic three, getting restful sleeps. So we've got, you know, ideas, seven ideas under physical exercise and what to do, and people can create much, much bigger lists than that in the class. Collaborate. They might create a walking group that they do. We've seen people do all kinds of things. Start riding bikes together, start, instead of getting off at the bus stop near the office, they get off some blocks earlier and walk together. Different things that people come up with. And then restful sleep. How important is that? I mean, for so many people, everything can go south if you're not getting good sleep, really, pretty quickly. And so helping each other understand something. I have this secret that I use, and I have that thing that I use, and no, that doesn't work for me. And just big discussions about what can work for people in all kinds of things. We also talk about the idea of weight. And it isn't talked about in a way that you're overweight, lose weight. But you could be really underweight, and that can create serious health risks. And could we just be healthier rather than, you know, you're overweight, you're overweight, you're overweight, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. And I think, you know, it was talked about a little this morning, but psych meds create issues of weight. And, you know, I, for one, used to be about 104 pounds. And then in the 90s, when they came out with new meds, suddenly I was growing magnificently. And, you know, became twice my size. And, you know, it was shocking. It's very hard, and it's debilitating. But because the bodies aren't prepared for it, it happens fairly quickly. So it's not something that develops over time. And to understand that it's not your fault is a big, big thing. So I remember the first time I went to an endocrinologist who said it wasn't my fault, that it's the medication changes the way your brain works. I was like, oh, you're not going to blame me and think I'm sitting home eating potato chips all day and things, you know. It was really freeing. And it isn't that I don't pay attention to my health. I do all the time because I have diabetes now. That was another special thing that happened. But I, you know, I take care of myself very well. But I have this weight that doesn't want to go away. And it's not weight that you lose easily. It's because your body changes. So understanding that and understanding ways that we can be healthy, even in spite of having weight on us, is important. And then relationships. How many of you are in a healthy relationship? How nice is that? To share with someone. And it doesn't have to be a loving relationship, just a friendship. Can be any kind of relationship, a good relationship with your mom, a great relationship with your peer support. Some folks that we know, they haven't had a relationship in a really long time of any sort, and that's why peer support can be really a life-saving thing for lots of people. And isn't peer support, one of the reasons that we have peer support is to mirror what it's like to have a healthy relationship with someone. When they show up on time, it builds trust. When they come week after week, it builds trust. When they listen to you, it builds, you know, a friendship there, like friendship. And a healthy, healthy relationship with someone. And, of course, there are certain, you know, guidelines and, boundaries and ethics that are required of peer support specialists. But, you know, all in all, it can help someone learn what they can expect in a really healthy relationship rather than someone who shows up at the first of the month and is gone by the third. Right? And then we talk about what does it mean to be in an empowering relationship? What do you think that includes, an empowering relationship?
Radical.
Yeah?
Sometimes.
Yeah? And what else?
Compassion, love, care,
validation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things you're validating is someone's own expertise to make their own decisions, right? And you're accepting that they can do that, and you're believing in them. And let's say they make 10 mistakes in a row. It's okay. And so you know, the value of creating these healthy relationships and understanding that we can find our own way in healthy relationships with friends who don't have to direct everything that we do. And if we fall down, it's still okay. We can get up and continue forward. Then we talk about finding our spiritual source. And, you know, this is a topic where we don't want to guide anybody or direct anybody, but we want to encourage people to explore this aspect if they're curious. And we've found over and over again with peer support that it's often something that people want to explore and they don't know how to do it. And so, you know, we encourage peers, you know, if someone wants to go to a church, let them identify where it is they want to go and offer to accompany them, but don't tell them where to go. And it could be for somebody that their spiritual journey is working at the Humane Society. It could be that someone, their spiritual journey is gardening, watching things grow, or walking in nature. So it has a vast meaning to different people. Then we look at identifying a way to move forward. One of the tools that we use for planning is the impact that was created by Larry Fricks and Ike Powell, and to make a plan that is workable for you, that's positively worded, that is something that you feel like you can achieve, that has a time frame around it, so it doesn't have to be endless. So you can make small goals there, and you know it becomes more manageable in that way. Have you heard about impact?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you used it?
No. Personally, yes, but not with my clients.
Mm-hmm. So personally, did you find it effective?
I do find it.
Yeah. And how about the positive wording of things? Yeah, how we frame things can make them something that stands looming in front of us or becomes a big adventure and a wonderful thing for us and a possibility. And then having short time frames for things can help us see that we reach goals and move past them and can prepare another goal following that one. And so then another aspect that happens at this point in time is that the class members learn and discuss how they can use this tool to help others and what they might do going forward in service to others, which can also be a spiritual aspect of someone's life. And so, you know, they fulfill a lot of goals in that way in their life because they're stretching outside their comfort zone when they learn and understand how they can help other people. And then the class starts talking about how the next class might look. What might they want to be doing for it? How can they get people to come into the class? And if you look in the back of the book, there's all kinds of sheets in the back of the book that are for planning. And that you can divide up the work between, if there's like 5 members of the class who want to help facilitate the next class, you can divide up the workload. You can create a call list to call people to invite them to the class. And it can be just a full-out, wonderful adventure of creating something. And when people participate in learning from the other side, so not being the recipient of information but actually the one who imparts information, they're actually going to learn and retain even more than they did sitting in the class. And so that's another reason that it's important to have people be able to be the next co-facilitators. Then we always, as we do at our organization, every time somebody finishes a class or something, we have a big to-do. We have a graduation. And one of the reasons that we do that is so that people see that they're moving ahead. They're clearing things out of the way. They're taking steps forward. They're finishing things. And for a lot of folks, you know, class might be the first thing they've finished in a really long time. So let's talk if you have any questions or you want to discuss anything that you've heard today. Does this seem like something that you could see working where you provide services?